Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, we are in the throes of the postseason. We are a couple weeks removed from our last podcast, but we needed our break after the season ended and we enter the postseason. So we're back to talk about relief pitchers. How are you enjoying the playoffs so far? I know the Red Sox didn't make it too far, but the Yankees didn't either.
Right. Yeah, I mean, wasn't expecting much from the Red Sox, honestly. You know, after they stole game one, I kind of like, all right, maybe there's something here. But it looks like, yeah, they would have run into this buzzsaw at Toronto right now. The way that they're playing, I don't think it would have mattered. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fun having, especially if like somehow the Dodgers get knocked off here. It's fun having the rest of these teams. Like if we get like a Seattle Milwaukee World Series, I feel like that'd be super fun. I don't know, it's not going to be the biggest moneymaker for MLB, but for like a real fan standpoint, it's a really fun matchup in my mind. I think that'd be cool. Or even Toronto. I mean, I know Toronto's in the AL East too, but like it's a fun team to root for, especially with Vladdy Jr. So yeah, there's still some fun. You know, different suspects, you know, different teams, but it's been an enjoyable postseason so far.
Yeah, Blue Jays and Phillies are definitely a pair of fun teams, but both the Mariners and the Brewers have never won a World Series. The Mariners haven't even been to one, so I think I agree that would
for
be
those fan
pretty exciting.
Be, yeah,
right, and both of those teams have exciting players, and it's fun, and yeah, it feels like MLB has been promoting the Mariners a lot on social media. I think part of that is because Cal Raleigh's been so incredible this year, but
yeah,
they're a pretty marketable team. Their starters are incredible. The lineup's really solid around Cal Raleigh and J-Rod, but those two guys are cool. And of course you'll see a lot of Ichiro if the Mariners make it, and the Brewers are like that one team where nobody is really that great compared to the rest of the league. There's no superstar player. I mean, Yelich is still there, but the amalgamation of that team is like unstoppable.
Right. The fundamental team. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They just do everything kind of right.
Right.
The pitching solid, hitting solid, everything. Yeah. Just, yeah. The quintessential team, you know, concept. So yeah, that's those are fun teams. I mean, we'll see what happens tonight. This Dodgers game still going on. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. So we're going to talk some more playoffs today, discuss some notable bullpen operations that occurred during the first couple rounds of the playoffs thus far. Nothing crazy, no deep dives into the playoffs. I'm sure every single podcast is doing that right now. So we'll give you a little different flavor with a bullpen lean on those. And then we will close things out by looking at our preseason predictions and determining how prescient we were in regards to those predictions, determining were we right, were we wrong. Did the same last year, done the same in the past. It's always fun to see where our minds were at the beginning of the season, because it always provides you with almost like a learning opportunity. Like, okay, where was my mind at with this prediction? And is it something that I can use as like more of a process thing moving forward? Is this the type of pitcher I should be looking at in this upcoming offseason in drafts, or should I be looking elsewhere? And it's even harder with relief pitchers. There is so much volatility with relief pitchers. It's almost impossible. It's pretty clear. Like it's usually just like a 50-50 coin flip, whether or not we're going to be right.
That's about where we were. Yeah.
Right. Right. And it's like that. That's even from guys like us who are looking at relief pitchers all the time. So it's very difficult, but always fun to go and look back at that. Yeah. So before we get into everything, though, there are a couple injury news. A couple relievers have decided to undergo Tommy John surgery this offseason. Most notably, Reed Garrett, Nick Enright of the Guardians is also undergoing Tommy John surgery. This shouldn't have a huge impact on either of these teams, but Garrett has been really reliable for the Mets. And I think the biggest impact that will have, obviously, outside of the performance of that bullpen, is they're going to go out and get some guys this offseason.
They have to. I mean, they have like no one. I mean, they already lost. Daniel Nunez is already gone too. I don't know if it was Tommy John, but he had some surgery.
Mm-hmm.
As did Max Kranick. It's not just like the depth guys there too. So yeah, looking at what they have actually under contract for next year, it's AJ Minter. Brooks Raley, I think, has a pretty cheap team option. They'll probably keep him. And then like Huascar Brazoban. So yeah, I mean, obviously it's the Mets. Wow. They have money to spend, so they're gonna probably, I'm guessing, they add three or four guys to that bullpen
at least. Yeah,
and maybe not free agency, maybe they swing a trade or two, but yeah, they'll throw some money around at relievers this year, this offseason. And it's a really good, and we've talked about it a little bit, but the free agent class is pretty fun. A lot of, maybe the names are bigger than the actual talent, but it's there's definitely a lot of guys with closer experience out there.
And in less significant injury news, Tanner Scott was removed from the Dodgers playoff roster after undergoing a procedure to remove a lower body abscess. It seems pretty vague there. What's going on? Maybe yeah. Tanner Scott's back for the championship series or the World Series.
I forget the rules. If you're removed from the division series, are you allowed to be? I'm not sure.
I don't think you can be re-added to the division series roster.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's able to be. I don't know. There's some rule, I think, with it depends on how you're.
Like if you're placed on the IL or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It says he'll be without him for the rest of the NLDS and all of the NLCS. Yeah.
Oh,
so if you're placed on the injury list, you have to miss the next series, too. Yeah.
That is pretty big, especially with the Dodgers bullpen woes.
Yeah. And I mean, especially if they get the Cubs have a bunch of lefties there. I know for Scott, they're not necessarily using him just on lefty on lefty, but. Cubs, if they advance a ton of lefties, and even the Brewers, they love to play matchups. So I'm sure, they still have Vesia, Dreyer, Robleski. So they'll have lefties, but yeah, still Scott, even like the way he wasn't finishing the year, he didn't finish the year great, but there's still talent there. I still think he's their closer for next year. That's another discussion for another day, but, he got a lot of flack this year, but I think he's fine. The metrics, the underlying stuff looks fine for the most part.
Yeah, well, I think that's a conversation we can have as we talk about how the Dodgers have used their bullpen this playoff run, and maybe because Scott is injured, we shouldn't read into it too much because he's not available. But it certainly worth talking about. But let's dive into the playoffs. We'll go round by round and series by series and see if there's any notable things to talk about. We'll start with the interdivision matchup between the Tigers and Guardians in the wild card series that saw the Tigers win in three games. Will Vest was used pretty regularly as the closer. I mean, Kyle Finnegan was relied upon heavily, but it seems like Will Vest is that guy. Does that sort of have you leaning as him opening the season as the closer, the way that Hinch has been using him? I mean, I know Finnegan's going to be a free agent.
Yeah, it's a good sign. And he's been, especially in this series with Seattle, I feel like Finnegan's been all over the place. And like I think he came in the fourth inning. So yeah, the only guy that they, Hinch trying to get that winning game four, like they were holding on to Vest for the last, for the ninth inning. So I do think that's a good sign for him for next year. Yeah, there's a chance Detroit. I mean, Detroit does have, they can spend money. Like there's a way that they could go out and get a closer. They just haven't done it in the past, a couple years. And I feel like part of it, we've talked, like, I think AJ Hinch just likes having not a big name, so he can play matchups and kind of mix and match and do his own thing. Where if they were to sign a closer, then it's like, all right, I'm stuck with this guy in the ninth inning and whatever. But I don't know. We'll see. I think Vest is the leading candidate for sure. But yeah, it's probably going to be another situation where he will get usage in the sixth, seventh inning every now and then, depending on lineup pockets and whatnot. But I still like it. Going into the postseason, Vest was struggling, and I was like, oh, man, I don't know. Is he even going to be the closer in October? And then I think the last week of the regular season, he started, pitching better. So, he's carried that into the postseason in October. So hopefully, Vest finishes strong and we have some semblance of a closer in Detroit for next year.
So sounds like we're going to see similar usage to this past year. Doesn't feel like
that's just the, how I think AJ Hinch wants the role. Yeah.
He doesn't want to settle on one guy, and it's been working for them. They've been making the playoffs and making it pretty deep into the playoffs as well, as they won the wild card series and are currently in the division series against the Mariners. On the Guardian side of that one, they lost the series, but we saw Cade Smith pitch in each of those games. Right now, we're still without any concrete news from Emmanuel Clase, whether or not he's going to be able to pitch next year. The longer we go without getting news, the more confident I am that he's not going to pitch next year, or at least he's not going to pitch for a significant portion of the season. I know that he's pitching in one of those Central American leagues.
Lydom. But, you know, he hasn't thrown probably, you know, he hasn't been in a professional environment or game situation in a while. So I don't know what the situation is, but it doesn't sound from the tea leaves from the beat writers, it doesn't seem like they're preparing for him to be available next year.
Dodgers just won. They're going to the championship series.
I know. I figured Kirk Gooding was going to blow this.
Watch this play. He gets a comebacker and boots it and then tries to go home instead of the first. Oh, no. Go ahead.
Oh, that's tough. Oh, man. That's bad.
Yeah.
I feel for him now. That's sad.
I didn't like that.
That's a tough way to walk off the year.
Yeah, right? Ugh. All right. Now we're rooting for the NL Central.
Ryan Kirkering, buddy. Mm. Yeah, let's go Brewers.
Or anyway. Cubs. That game's still going.
Right. I don't mind the Cubs either. But anyway, back to Cleveland. Class A, probably it doesn't seem like he's going to be there next year. So I'm very, you know, I'm going to have closer rankings out next week, which is like, I mean, it's, I don't want to say it's an impossible task. It's just like a, you know, trying to figure out roles is very hard, obviously October before next season. But you know, as of now, I don't see any reason for Cade Smith not to be the closer. So I'm leaning towards him as like a top five option for next year, especially, you know, the last two seasons, it's not, have not been a fluke. And that Cleveland, something about that Cleveland closer role too. There's a lot of stability as far as, you know, the way that team wins games. It's similar to Seattle. It's, you know, really good starting pitching and the offense is just good enough to win games. So you're going to get a bunch of save opportunities. Mm-hmm. And he's got solid guys in front of him to get the ball to the ninth and Gattis and Zabrowski, but neither one's really like a threat to take over the job. So, I think Cade Smith's, you know, I don't know where he's going to go in drafts, but he's probably going to be a sleeper in my mind for next year.
Right. He feels like I don't know where we had Andrés Muñoz going into this year.
Yeah, he was like sixth.
Where he hasn't quite taken off. He hasn't quite had that big fantasy relevant season. So people might be a little bit wary, but he's put up the numbers the past couple of years to definitely be worth a pretty high pick. Definitely top 100, probably in those 15 team leagues. Sure. He's going to be like a top 75 pick.
And it's partially because like people still look at save totals and he's not going to have that save total. So that's going to bring him down a little bit. So yeah, it's kind of like maybe similar to like Trevor McGill this year. I mean, if you can get him at that sort of price, I think that would be huge for Cade Smith.
All right.
I'll take him inside the top 100 probably in roto leagues.
Yeah. He pitched really well too in the wild card series.
Yeah, he looked
three
good.
Appearances, 3 1/3 innings. He didn't allow a single hit. So, very dominant.
That's the one thing that worries me, but he's like the usage because he pitched all three games. I mean, that whole bullpen pitched all three games pretty much.
Yeah.
But even in September, Cade Smith was going like 3 days in a row, I think a couple times. So a lot of mileage on his arm the last 2 years, that's the only concern. But I mean, if he's healthy in the spring, then like I'm just roll with him. I mean, I can't predict any sort of long-term injury.
Yeah. All right. The other wild card series matchup we had on the AL side was the classic AL East rivalry, the Red Sox versus the Yankees. The Yankees took that one in three games, but we'll start by talking about the Red Sox bullpen a little bit. Nothing crazy. I mean, we saw Aroldis Chapman pitch a couple of games. He was a little bit shaky, but the stuff is still there. I was considering where to draft him in drafts and whether or not I would be okay drafting him. I mean, that's more of like a moral ethics question, but because he was so good and he was still really good in the playoffs and there's nobody there that's going to take his role. They've already extended him into the next season. It's somebody who should clearly be drafted as a top five closer, but like even outside of the moral ethics stuff, it's like, okay, this was sort of out of nowhere. And do we really trust he finally learned how to start commanding his pitches and not even learn to command, realize that he is allowed to command his pitches, that he's allowed to throw the pitches where he wants to. So I don't know if that's something that's more or less sustainable than other breakouts, especially at his age. I mean, is he somebody that you are going to rank in the top five? Is he somebody that you are confident in drafting next year, early on in draft?
Yeah, I think the command should be fine. That walk rate should be more or less fine. I don't see just the changes he made to his approach, I think, warrant that. But that requires his stuff to be, you know, is he going to be 38? Like, is he still going to be throwing 100 next year? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he is. I mean, he's a physical force. But yeah, I have him in that second tier. I have two guys in tier one and Chapman's in tier two with a couple guys. So he's in the top 6 to 8. I don't know where exactly he'll fall, but I mean, he was the best reliever in baseball this year, best closer in baseball this year, at least. I don't really see any reason for him to regress back to that, like, 15% walk rate guy. Seems to be working in Boston. So yeah, what if he's like, you know, 97, 98? What if the velo, you know, I don't know. It's just how many guys in like their late 30s are throwing 100 miles per hour? It eventually age catches up to everyone.
He might be like the only person in the world doing that.
Yeah, I know. Again, it's different with starters, but like we saw how, like, you know, Verlander and like, you know, a lot of these dominant, you know, starters just like at some point in your late 30s, it's just your velo is going to dip. And yeah, if Chapman's just throwing balls over the plate now. He doesn't care about location because his stuff's so nasty. But yeah, if the stuff ticks down, then all of a sudden he's hittable. So we'll see. I'm still, until we see that happen, I'm not gonna drop him or anything. So I still think he's safe in the top, you know, 5, 6, definitely no lower than 8.
Okay. And on the Yankee side, we saw their likely 2026 closer, David Bednar, pitch in all three games of the wild card series. He allowed one run in his first appearance, but he was locked down in his other two appearances. They're using him pretty heavily throughout this postseason, and that's sort of expected, especially considering how unreliable Devin Williams was throughout the year, how unreliable Luke Weaver has looked in the postseason as well. But David Bednar feels like another one of those guys that's sort of in the range of Chapman and Cade Smith, or at least in the next tier right below them at the top of it, where he's just been really solid and had a couple hiccups over the past couple of years, but he's really settled in. There's going to be no competition for him next year with Devin Williams and Luke Weaver leaving, but he's looked very good in the playoffs thus far.
Yeah, no, I love how I think they asked Devin Williams if he was open to a return to New York, and he's like, yeah, definitely. You know, it takes two, like, the, you know, prototypical, your typical answer. But like, there's no chance Devin Williams is back in New York next year.
No, he's going to be a closer somewhere.
It's what, yeah, he's going to get chances to close. I think that's probably what he wants to do. That's what he should do. He's going to be another guy who is going to probably have a nice discount next year. You know, I do, you know, want to see where he lands first, but more likely than not, I will definitely be in on Devin Williams next year. But yeah, and same with Bednar, because he's proven in New York that he's, you know, the Sid that city, that team is not too big for him. You know, he's been in Pittsburgh his whole life. But yeah, he's been the only guy they can trust. He'll be the closer next year unless they were, you know, just like go crazy and go after like Edwin Diaz or something, but I doubt it. So I feel like Bednar's pretty safe bet to close for the Yankees next year. And yeah, he's in that next tier, you know, that next group, 3 to 8. You know, I think Williams and Bednar could both be in there, depending on where Williams' landing spot is.
All right, next we're going to head into the National League wildcard series. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham talking relief pitchers in the postseason. We are entering the National League wildcard series, and we'll be talking about the Reds and Dodgers series, which is the only one that ended in a sweep. The Dodgers took that one in two games. We'll start with the Reds bullpen, though. They weren't really there to hold leads, so you can't really read into it too much. Emilio Pagan didn't even pitch at all. So there's really not much to read into here, but he's not going to be on the team next year. So I don't know. Where are you leaning for the Reds next year? I mean, there's not much to talk about how they pitched in the playoffs, but there's so many exciting arms in this bullpen, and we didn't even see a lot of them in the playoffs.
Well, some of these guys will be back in the rotation. Right. Realistically, I think next year with the returners in that bullpen will be Santillan, Ashcraft, and Connor Phillips probably deserves to be in that discussion too. Mm-hmm. But they might end up with one of those three closing out games. But I mean, this Reds team starting to, you know, the rotation can be really good. You know, they're like a closer and, you know, one bat away, I feel like, from really being able to make some noise. So I don't know if they bring back Pagan or if they go out and get somebody else, but I mean, like I said, there's a lot of closer experience out there in free agency. So I'd imagine their closer comes from outside the organization. I know Tony Santillan was pretty good this year, but I don't know. He kind of faded down the stretch. And I don't wonder if Terry Francona too, like, likes him better in that kind of fireman role. And right now, I don't know if you can really trust Ashcraft or Phillips. They're both converted to the bullpen pretty nicely, but I don't know if you want to trust either one as a closer. And you know, May and Maxwell are still kind of young, and you know, maybe they're future closers, so maybe that means, you know, you go out and get like a veteran, like a Kenley Jansen or whatever. But they'll definitely be in the market for a closer, as they should be.
All right, that's the Reds. And then on the other side, the Dodgers handled them pretty easily, but we did see those bullpen woes crop up again. It really seemed like they had no clue who to turn to with a lead. No matter who they put in, they were giving up runs. Blake Treinen sort of settled down a little bit in this series, but not enough to the point that Roky Sasaki actually came in and closed out game two. It wasn't a save opportunity, but he looked really dominant. There was definitely a clear difference between him in this game and him earlier in the season, and even him pitching in the minor leagues, because he was getting roughed up at like AAA by some you know, mediocre minor league lineups. I apparently he changed his leg position and he's back to throwing 100 miles per hour. Right. So what do you think the likelihood of Sasaki remaining in the rotation is? Because I feel like there's still the possibility with how much starting pitching depth the Dodgers have, that Sasaki could pitch out of the bullpen this year and then return to the rotation the following year in 2027.
You say in 27? Because I don't know. What do they have?
The Braves did that with Spencer Strider. They used him out of the bullpen his first full season. And I know this was Sasaki's first season, but they still have so many guys. I know Kershaw's gone, but they'll have Glasnow and Snell and Yamamoto and Otani and Emmett Sheehan and like all these other young guys. And like, there's still room for Sasaki, but if he's having success out of the bullpen, they don't really have a clear closer or somebody that really was dominant this past season. And they want Sasaki to like get that confidence back that he clearly has now pitching out of the bullpen. I feel like one way to do that is let him be the closer for a year and then put him back in the rotation.
Yeah. I mean, they could. I don't see it. Yeah, they do have options, but I still feel like if Sasaki is pitching as well as he is now, I feel like he's still a top five or six rotation option for them next year.
Definitely. But not like he pitched earlier.
I know. And he, I mean, obviously he came over with all that hype and wanted, it's, you know, supposed to be a big time starter. I mean, maybe they give him another year in the bullpen, but I still think he ends up starting for them next year. It's the Dodgers. I mean, they don't have to, they'll go spend money on, they'll go sign Devin Williams and Edwin Diaz if they want, like, let's be honest. So I think they'll probably piece together the bullpen and free agency, and Sasaki is in the rotation as long as he's healthy. But yeah, maybe, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see it. Cause if he keeps dominating, I mean, out of the bullpen, there's going to be more and more talk about him just sticking as
right.
the closer next year.
Either way, like he's going up in drafts. Yeah. His ADP is going to be rising quickly just because he just seems useful either way. Yeah, right. Yeah. He's going to be useful either way in fantasy, whether he's a starter or the Dodgers closer. I think I'd prefer him as a starter in the long term, but in the short term, yeah. I mean, from a fantasy, from a in the pen perspective, it'd be dope to talk about him as the closer.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and then gives Tanner Scott a little bit more flexibility to use him differently,
right.
Sort of forcing him into the closer role. But yeah, I feel like they'll, and it's the Dodgers, so that they really realistically they need like 8 to 10 starters anyway. So I feel like he'll be one of those guys. And you know, Glasnow's not going to pitch a full season. Snell probably won't either. I mean, it's Ohtani maybe. I don't know. We'll see. So. Yeah, I think Sasaki is back in the rotation, and they'll be able to spend money to fill in some holes in the bullpen. I think Trinan's back too. I know he hasn't pitched well, but you know they have Trinan and Scott back. And yeah, they really only lose Kopech.
Well, sounds like that bullpen is going to be injured again next year.
Yeah, I mean they'll all be injured, but they'll make it to the NLCS again, I'm sure.
Yeah. Of course, unfortunately.
I'm sure you'll love that. Yeah.
All right. The other National League wild card series we had was the Padres versus the Cubs. The Cubs took that in 3 games. We'll start with the Padres bullpen, though. And I think we got 2 guys to talk about pretty clearly, maybe a third. Robert Suarez will be a free agent, so that's the third guy. I don't know if there's much to say at this point. We don't know who he's going to be pitching for, so it's hard to determine what his role is going to be like. But I will start with Adrian Morejon, who pitched in all 3 games and was so good. he pitched 4 1/3 innings in 3 games and just was unhittable the whole time. And he looked really dominant. I mean, he's definitely going to be one of the top setup men for the Padres next year. But, man, what an impressive performance from Morejon. And then also got to talk about Mason Miller, who I don't know if he's looked better than he looked in this series, where he just struck out 8 batters in 2 2/3 innings, was just absolutely dominating.
Yeah, I mean, Mason Miller, since he joined the Padres, including the postseasons, thrown 26 innings for the Padres, and he has 53 strikeouts.
That's crazy.
He's just been throwing his slider more. He's throwing now, he's at like a 50-50 split with the slider and fastball.
Well, he had that immaculate inning where he only threw sliders.
He's almost gone back, you know, flipped it where he's throwing more sliders, and now it's... Mm-hmm. You know, you're sitting, you don't know what to, as a hitter, you don't know if you're do I sit 103 or do I
dots 105 on the edge on the like corner.
I just think, I don't think he's going to move to the rotation anytime soon. He's a 2-pitch guy. He did an interview, or they asked him on like MLB Network a month ago about returning to the rotation. He didn't seem too, I don't know, he didn't seem like interested in it. He said like, don't fit, you know, basically something like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So it's something along those lines. So I think he's fine in the bullpen. I don't think they'll spend money to keep Suarez. I feel like they got to spend money on a rotation arm or maybe another bat. So I feel like Miller's almost not guaranteed the closer role, but like, you know, you went out and traded a top prospect for the guy. I feel like he deserves to be the closer next year. And in that situation, I mean, I think he's my top closer on the board for next year. I know there's still some question marks. It's either him or Edwin Diaz for me. I just think if Miller is the closer, he's kind of ahead. Like the strikeout rate being over 50%, I mean, yeah, no one really can touch that.
He's better than Diaz, but it seems like there's no way Diaz isn't the closer, and there's still that question with Miller if he's even going to be a reliever.
I wonder where Diaz ends up. I mean, I'm guessing the Mets are going to do whatever they can to keep him, but
because that bullpen is empty.
They need, yeah, I mean, it makes sense for him to stay. They have the money to do it, but it's just, I always, you know, kind of worry if guys are guys changing teams, where they end up, just, you know, uncertainty with, you know, the rest of the roster there, coaches, catcher, ballpark's different. So, but yeah, Miller, I feel pretty confident in, will be the closer. It's funny, Morahone, I mean, he was the seventh in Yahoo Standard Leagues. He was the seventh best reliever this year. So, you know, there was Chapman, Diaz, Munoz, Robert Suarez, Josh Hader, Duran, and then Adrian Morahone, because he had, I think, 12 wins. But either way, I mean, it just goes to show you. And that role should stick around for him next year, where he's coming in the fifth, sixth inning. They'll lose Suarez, but they'll still, you know, they'll still have a really deep bullpen. So I still feel like Morahone's going to get some, you know, usage, fifth, sixth inning, close tie games, you know, down a run, up a run. He'll get some wins still. So still a very effective overall fantasy option, Adrian Morahone.
And on the other side, the Cubs had some really interesting usage of their bullpen. I mean, they were all over the place. Daniel Palencia was used very early on in games. He's not the clear-cut closer in the playoffs right now. Andrew Kittredge was used as a setup man, an opener, and a closer. So he was just doing it all. He had a hold, a loss, and a save in that series. And Brad Keller looked pretty solid as well, though it does look like he's running out of gas. It really felt like in game three when he was trying to close out that series, like he just didn't have anything left. He couldn't find the zone at all, which required Kittredge to come in after pitching 2 days in a row to close out that final game. But the Cubs are mixing and matching. It feels very Tigers-esque.
Yeah, that's kind of what they've turned into. I mean, yeah, it's been interesting seeing Palencia early in games. For the most part, he's looked pretty good. I don't think, even if Kittredge returns next year and Keller will be a free agent, I still think Palencia has the, you know, the leg up and being the closer next year. I don't think this postseason, I think it's like just all hands on deck. At this point, Palencia is coming back from injury too. So, as long as he keeps looking good out there, I still think he gets the edge over Kittredge for saves in 2026. But yeah, you know, they could always go out and add, you know, either bring back Keller, or Devin Williams was, you know, Craig Counsell's guy in Milwaukee. Maybe he's an option.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Okay, now that wraps up the wildcard series. We can move into the division series. We'll probably skip the teams we've already talked about, but we'll start with the Yankees and Blue Jays series that the Blue Jays took in four games. They pretty much dominated the Yankees, and it was fun to watch. I don't know. I think the majority of baseball fans aren't Yankees fans, so I don't think anybody will complain about the results there. And I don't think you can blame the bullpen either for the Yankees, but the bullpen was in use a lot by the Blue Jays. They relied heavily on it. Louis Varland gave up that big homer to Aaron Judge, but man, they used him in just about every game. I mean, he was the opener in that final game as well. I think he pitched in all four games. He was very relied upon very heavily. His stuff is incredible. He wasn't as dominant as you would expect with that stuff though, which is interesting. But he'll be back there for the Blue Jays next year and should be maybe their top setup man.
Yeah, I mean, that Judge home run was stupid.
It's like six inches off the inside corner.
Judge either had to have known that pitch was coming, or he just guessed like that spot, location, pitch, and just, you know what I mean? Like, there's no way you get your hands in that quickly. I mean, Aaron Judge is just a freak. But yeah, other than that, I mean, yeah, Varland's was awesome in the series. I think with, I think Hoffman, even with his struggles, is probably the favorite to open up as closer again. He's getting paid to be the closer there. So I think, Yeah, Varlin, Yimi Garcia, Yariel Rodriguez will probably be in the mix, but this is one of those, we just talked about like Morejone being a factor in standard leagues just because he gets a bunch of wins because he comes in the fifth, sixth inning. I feel like this bullpen, they have, this is going to be deep enough where there's going to be a guy who probably could have some, you know, fantasy relevance as like a, you know, fifth, sixth inning option for them who gets, you know, six plus wins and a lot of strikeouts and good ratios. It could be Louis Varlin. I mean, he might be, because he's able to go multiple innings potentially, or maybe it's someone like Yariel Rodriguez. But yeah, it's going to be a really, really deep bullpen next year, even losing Sir Anthony Dominguez. And that's it. They're only losing Dominguez. So yeah, they'll still have a really good bullpen for 2026.
They will. The other ALDS matchup we have is still ongoing. The Tigers versus the Mariners will play game 5 on Friday. We are recording on Thursday, so we don't yet know the results of that matchup, but it's been a lot of bullpen usage in this series too. Not much else to talk about on the Tigers side, though. Cater Montero has recorded a save, which was interesting. I don't expect him to be a high leverage reliever for the Tigers next year. He's a pretty low end starter at this point, and they're sort of using him in emergency situations. But on the Mariners side, we've seen a lot of the same guys pitching a lot. Edward Bizzardo has pitched in all 4 games thus far. Gabe Spire, who I've been calling Gabe Spear. I've been calling him Spear like all season, and I swear I looked it up and it said Spear on Baseball Reference, and now they switched it up on
Spire. Maybe he's changed. Yeah,
gaslighting maybe.
But
anyway, Gabe Spire has looked very solid, except out of his last
game
performance
4 was wasn't tough. Yeah,
too great. Yeah. Matt Brash, Andres Munoz have both been used heavily, and that's as expected, but Munoz has been untouchable, and it looks like he's going to be the closer for a long time in Seattle as long as they lock him down.
Yeah, and I'm a little worried about him throwing 3 days, or it wasn't 3 days in a row, I guess, but the 2 innings in game 1 was kind of a shock.
Right, that was the first time he's done that all season. I think he had one other appearance where he pitched 4 outs.
Right, it's a postseason, though. You know, you gotta get your outs. You gotta trust the guys you know you can trust, and Munoz is definitely the alpha there, and then, you know, Matt Brash has looked good as well, but. Yeah, I mean, Spire's been great all year. First 2 games were great. I'll give him a pass for game 4. He's still one of the best lefties in lefty relievers in all of baseball right now.
Definitely. So not much to talk about on the Mariners bullpen side. It seems pretty straightforward, their usage right now and how they're entering 2026. So now we can talk about the National League Division Series. We'll start with the Cubs versus the Brewers, which is ongoing right now. It looks like the Cubs are up 3-0 in the third, so they may be able to force a game 5 here. Like we said, already talked about that bullpen a little bit. But on the Brewers side, I thought it was interesting the usage that they've had here. They've relied heavily on guys like Nick Mears and Koenig and some of their bulk relief guys. But I this sort of makes sense. In the first game 2, they used Trevor McGill in the 8th inning to get the final 2 outs there. That made sense because he hadn't appeared in a game in weeks. That was his first time off the IL pitching in a game. So it made sense to like ease him into that. Don't put him like directly in the save opportunity, but, you know, make sure he's still pitching high leverage. And then they turned to Abner Uribe, who struck out the side in the 9th, had a really cool celebration afterwards too. And it sort of has me wondering, do you think the Brewers might turn to Abner Uribe as the closer next year? And maybe this is something to keep an eye on throughout the playoffs. Like, maybe if we continue to see usage like this where McGill is used earlier in the games than Uribe, then maybe they prefer Uribe in the 9th inning. But I don't know. What's your read on this?
Yeah, that's something to keep an eye on. I mean, I think, like you said, it has to do with McGill being out for so long. And is he even still 100%? I mean, Vila was down a little bit in that game. But yeah, I still feel like we'll have to see how they're used the rest of the series and potentially the rest of the postseason. Because I don't feel like McGill deserves to lose that job as well as Uribe has been this year. Because even towards the end of the year, Uribe was pitching the 8th inning every now and then with Koenig throwing the 9th. So maybe we're just seeing a little bit of a fundamental change where, you know, they're going with matchup based, you know, reliever by committee at the last couple innings of the games. But and they really could with, you know, McGill and Uribe, they're almost interchangeable, and Koenig's a, you know, great left-handed option for them. So yeah, and even, you know, Nick Mears has looked pretty good this series as well. So they have options there. I still think McGill's the favorite for saves, but yeah, we'll have to see what happens either tonight or in game five if they don't come back tonight.
All right, and lastly, we've got the Dodgers and Phillies. The Dodgers just wrapped up that series, winning it in four games. The bullpen was a little bit hectic, but it really locked in that final game, and Sasaki played a big part in that one with three perfect innings. So really great job there from Sasaki. We still wonder whether or not what his role is going to be next year, but yet to be determined. We'll see how the rest of the playoffs go.
Three innings tonight, so maybe they're stretching him out a little bit. I don't know. He only threw 35 pitches in the three innings, though.
Yeah, so pretty impressive. Yeah, yeah. He's really good, and I'm glad to see him finding success, because I was really worried with the way that
I know.
Even as a Dodgers player, I mean, you know, you want to root for
those guys are fun. Yeah, too.
Yeah.
The whole Otani, I mean, I have nothing to, yeah, Otani, Yamamoto, and Sasaki are like, that's a really fun, you know, group and storyline. Yeah, that's the thing. The Dodgers, like, I like the players. It's the Dodgers I just don't like, you know what I mean?
Which is why it's so unfortunate when they get all these cool players. And I know. Like, I have to root against you now. This is terrible.
They've always had cool players, too. I know. Whatever.
Sucks. But the Phillies bullpen didn't really get too many opportunities. Yoan Duran was used pretty heavily, and I thought he was used sort of willy-nilly, in my opinion. They lost both of the first two games, and Duran pitched in both of them, and I thought, okay, well, what happens when you need him at full strength in a game that you are winning? And that never really happened, where they needed to rely on Duran. They got him early in the game today in game four, and ultimately didn't really matter. But they used him heavily, and I think they'll continue to do so next year. And I'm sort of really excited to see full season of Duran without the competition from Griffin Jacks and pitching for a team that's going to win a bunch of games. And I think Duran's going to be a very, very clear top 10 closer. Not that he hasn't been over the past few years, but that should be fun. There's really not much else to talk about in this bullpen, though. It's the same guys, and nobody really stood out with their performance.
Yeah, it's Duran should have a little bit more stability, I guess, when, you know, because Rocco Baldelli would kind of use him weirdly at times too, and Minnesota, but I think in Philly, Matt Strom should be back. Alvarado, maybe, I don't know. That's a really questionable one with his $9 million option. But between Strom and Kirkering getting the ball to Duran, it should be pretty straightforward next year for Philly. They could add someone else too, but no one that's going to challenge Duran.
All right. Well, that will wrap up our first couple of rounds of the playoffs review. So now we can head into what I would consider our main topic, as we look back at our preseason predictions and review how smart we were there. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen, discussing relievers with a V. We are going to talk about our preseason predictions and see where we were right, where we were wrong. We'll start with the guys that we were targeting. I think we had 8 targets total, and we'll determine whether or not we were right to target those guys. And we'll start with one that we're right about. Andres Munoz had an ADP of 72, and we were targeting him all over the place. I think I compared him to 2024 Ryan Helsley, in that he didn't have the save totals, didn't have that huge fantasy season, but I felt that was coming this year without the competition from Paul Sewald and Matt Brash in the beginning of the season. And Andres Munoz really took off this year, finishing on the Yahoo player rater as the number 40 player. So definitely provided greater value beyond his ADP and was very reliable throughout the year. The second half wasn't as dominant, but Munoz was super dope, and we were definitely right to target him.
Yeah, I think we had the right, we were about 50-50 and around that for these targets and fades and whatnot, but it's like, what was the thinking behind it? And I think this is where we got the player right and the thinking right, where it's, you know, new manager, more someone who's going to just, you know, stick with one closer instead of, you know, mixing and matching. So yeah, I think this was, you know, a good hit with Munoz. And yeah, I think next year, I think in our early mock, I think he went third. It was a third closer off the board, which is probably about where I'd imagine he's going next year, which sounds about right. There's no reason to believe he can't replicate what he did this year. Maybe, you know, a little bit of a regression ratio wise, but I still think, you know, he's a really solid pick in drafts for Nick for 2026.
Right. Next, we were targeting Felix Bautista, who actually had an ADP above Andrés Muñoz, just one pick at 71. But he was good when he was pitching. It sort of took him a little while to get going, which is what we expected. But then the dreaded injury hit him in the second half, and he ultimately finished the season as the 178th player, according to the Yahoo Player Rater. So unfortunate end of the season for Bautista, but I felt like we were on the right track. I mean, the stuff was there. He was going to be the closer. And it felt like as he was getting into the season, we were starting to see that the reminiscent the old Felix Bautista was coming back, and he looked dominant again.
Strikeouts started coming back. I mean, he had 19 saves in half a season, 2.60 ERA. I think we had the right idea. Just shoulder injury after the elbow injury, which is doesn't happen often, but that's a really brutal one. I don't know if we're ever going to see him. I don't think we're ever going to see 2023 Felix Bautista again, which stinks. But hopefully we get something from him, something, you know, productive, some positive outings from him in 2027. But yeah, that's two brutal injuries back to back. So, you know, yeah, this is one where it's the right idea. The injury bug bit him again.
Yeah. The next guy we were targeting was Ryan Walker with an ADP of 89. It felt like he was going to open the season as the Giants closer and build off the previous two seasons of success. And he was going a lot later than the guys in the top 10. So it felt like you were getting a little bit of value there. But as we all know, he struggled earlier in the season, lost the role to Camila Doval. And then once Doval was traded, Randy Rodriguez took the role over. And then by the end of the season, Walker was the closer again, but he wasn't pitching too well. So he finished the season as the 225th player on the Yahoo Player Rater. Why do we have an asterisk next to him?
Because we weren't like in, we weren't in on him. It was like, we were like, if you miss out on those like top 10 guys, like right. This is the last guy in that it can be like a really, that can be a solid, you know, RP1 for you. So like, you know, if you miss on the other guys, like, yeah, you can target him. So we were like kind of in on him, but not really. So, but we'll still, what we deserve. We put him on our list. So we'll take the L. And yeah, I don't, you know, it didn't, bad start and bad finish for him. Solid in between, I guess. But he's not an ideal closer for a really good team. So I do think this is somewhere the Giants look to improve this offseason. So I'm sure he'll have competition at least, if not to have a full, you know, replacement or, you know, someone else closing out games for San Francisco next year.
Next, we've got David Bednar, who had an ADP of 153 coming off a really rough 2024. So I think a lot of people were worried about how he was going to pitch in 2025. We, however, were not too scared off, and we decided to target David Bednar, and it paid off as he finished the season as the 55th player, according to Yahoo Player Rater. He started the season off terribly, got demoted to AAA, called back up later on, took over the closer role in Pittsburgh and locked back in, and then got traded to the Yankees and was dominant down the stretch too. So it was like a majority of the season, he was really good, David Bednar. And there was just a few weeks where it was pretty shaky. It looked like 2024 all over again, but we were right to target David Bednar. And if you were somebody who drafted him and then dropped him, then I mean, I'm one of those guys. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I was able to pick him up in our staff league. Is it you who dropped him?
I had him in our home league.
He was a home. Okay. But yeah, I didn't expect him to bounce back as well as he did. So yeah, the whole, not even the second half, it was really the last like three quarters of the season. He was dominant. Right. And it's similar. It's the stuff we were talking about where it's like, you know, he likes to throw his breaking ball early in counts, but he wasn't throwing it for strikes enough. And now, you know, he started, you know, mixing that and the splitter as well, you know, just throw that over for a strike, you know, mixing a couple strikes with that, and then it changes everything. So yeah, he's changed his approach, and he's also healthy, which, you know, last year he was battling injuries. So seeing him healthy and just, you know, getting ahead of counts earlier, big difference for him this year. So yeah, excited for him next year too. I think don't see any reason for him to, you know, fall apart again.
Mm-hmm. Next, we've got Trevor McGill, who's going at an ADP of 141. We were targeting him because he had really good stuff and had really good results. He just hasn't really been able to stay on the field, but didn't feel like there was a clear closer, and McGill had a pretty decent shot at holding on to that role the whole year. And he did a good job of that, finishing as the 78th player on the Yahoo Player Rater. So we'll take the dub here as well. McGill was very reliable throughout the year, and there was a stretch where he was really dominant. He started climbing up those saves leaderboards super fast, ended the season with an injury, but that didn't hurt his final ranking too much. So feel vindicated in suggesting that we target Trevor McGill.
Yeah, probably going into September, he was like a top 50 Yahoo overall, you know, rank. Then, you know, the injury moved him down a little bit as he didn't pitch in September. But yeah, we'll take that season from him for sure. And it was good to see him, you know, regain that strikeout ability, that strikeout stuff, because, you know, he had a bunch of saves last year, but he wasn't the same swing and miss guy that we saw from him in, you know, 2023. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was able to get back to missing bats last year. And yeah, you know, for a long stretch in the middle of the season, I had him as like the third closer on my ranks, third or fourth closer. So yeah, he was dominant for a long stretch last year.
All right, next we've got Jordan Romano, who had an ADP of 184. Not the best pick. He finished at 938 on the Yahoo Player Rater. One of the worst players we'll talk about in this section. I don't think the idea was wrong. I think that the player was a little bit wrong, because It seemed like he was pretty much the closer for the Phillies, and he opened the season as the closer, but he fell apart so quickly. It felt like we were getting a huge discount on a player that had an incredibly high ceiling, not only because he was pitching for the Phillies as their closer and appeared to be their closer, but also because he had been so good in the past. Outside of 2024, Jordan Romano was an all-star. So it felt like, okay, I'll take the risk around pick 200, or I guess 184 here. You know, you can probably get him around 200 in most drafts. I'll take that risk with the upside that he was providing. And ultimately, that didn't really pay off. And luckily, it was something that sort of fell apart so quickly that you probably could have dropped him within the first couple of weeks and really avoided the 8+ ERA he finished the season with.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, he got off to a really bad start, but then there was, I think it was a stretch in May where he was like straight up like the best we've seen Jordan Romano, and he was closing out games for Philadelphia, and then all of a sudden it just, yeah, things got went south again, and they never recovered. It never recovered. So yeah, it, you know, the last two thirds of the year were pretty bad, but. Yeah, I wonder, like, I mean, he finished the year on the IL. I'm sure it's going to be hard for him to find a chance to close out games next year. But, you know, I'm not ruling out, if he's healthy, I'm not ruling out a total, you know, a recovery, you know, a bounce back season for Romano. I think there were still signs last year where, you know, there's still some signs of that old Romano stuff from when he was the dominant closer in Toronto. But yeah, we'll see where he lands and how things shake up. But yeah, it was, you know, you could have gotten like a couple good weeks out of him last year, but that was about it.
Next, we've got Ryan Pressly, who had an ADP of 190. He was going to be the Cubs closer, but he was coming off a down season. But it really felt like he had a clear path to that job in Chicago, and it did not go well, so much so that he ended up off of the Cubs roster, finishing the season as the 688th player, according to Yahoo. This one was tough. He was going so late in drafts. It was another one where the upside was so high. We've seen what Ryan Pressly could do in the past. We didn't expect him to get back to where he was before in his heyday, but with the opportunity as the Cubs closer, and it seemed like if he could just pitch decently, he'd lock that role in and be great. But he did not pitch decently. He was pretty terrible. And even like the backup guy, like Porter Hodge, he was not good at all. So it was really hard to determine that Daniel Palencia would end up leading this team in saves, but definitely a big fat L for the Ryan Pressly target.
Yeah. Like similar to Romano, it's a late dart throw, but just hoping that he could reclaim that magic from 2 years ago in Houston. The thought was he wanted to close, and he was kind of mad that Hader took over in Houston. So that's why he wasn't that great in 2024. But, in 2025, he'll get a chance to close in Chicago. That will turn things around. But, yeah, he was never from the get-go, he was really shaky, never really had any sort of success. So, yeah, I don't know what the future – I don't think he's retired yet. But, he didn't latch on with another team. So we'll see what happens with him in the future. But had a really good run for a couple – 5 years or so with Houston before this year. So we'll see what happens.
Ryan Pressly. And our last guy we were targeting was AJ Puk, who had an ADP of 231. He was going to be battling with Justin Martinez for the closer role in Arizona, but he was so good for the majority of 2024, like best reliever in baseball by far, that he was somebody that we were going to target. And, we would have taken 10 saves and whatever he got us, because he was pitching so obscenely well. And unfortunately, the injury bug bit him, and not just him, but every single guy that filled the closer role for the Diamondbacks. And ultimately, Puk ended as the 465th player, according to the Yahoo Player Rater. But it felt like the opportunity was there. It felt like he had everything going his way, and like he could be the closer role. And maybe he splits a lot of save opportunities with Justin Martinez. But Puk looked so good, and ultimately the injury bug got him. Now he's undergoing Tommy John surgery, and we probably won't see him much of 2026.
Yeah, and I wonder if I wonder if they non-tender him, because he's only got 1 year left. But we'll see what his future looks like. He can make it back next year, late next year, because the injury happened so early.
Right. Diamondbacks want to make the playoffs,
I don't know. This one is he was going to be the closer. He pitched through in 8 games. He had 4 saves already. He was the closer, or at least option 1A to Martinez being 1B.
Right.
And he was off to such a good start. This one would have been a hit. And Tommy John happened. So what are you going to do? But it's unfortunate, because I love AJ Puk. I was obviously really big on him in the offseason. Tough seeing him only make it through 8 innings, and we'll probably won't see him till second half of next year.
So those were our targets. Now we'll look at the guys we were fading in the preseason and determine whether or not that was the correct thing to do. Ultimately, it's another 50-50 coin flip here as well. We'll start with Robert Suarez, who was at an ADP of 99, and we were avoiding him because he was like a one pitch pitcher in 2024. We needed to see more of that changeup for him to really take off. And ultimately we saw more of the changeup, but the strikeouts weren't there. He just got a ton of saves and tons of save opportunities. The Padres had so much competition there too, with Jason Adam, Jeremiah Estrada, but it didn't end up meaning anything because he was just so good the whole season. Not even that great, but he just kept getting every save opportunity. Even when Mason Miller came around, Suarez continued to get every save opportunity. So he finished as the 42nd player on the Yahoo Player Rater. But I think that was mostly because he just got a lot of saves. He didn't really pitch particularly exceptionally. I don't think either of us expected him to fall off the earth, but it was not, he was not somebody we wanted to target inside the top 100 with guys like Trevor McGill and David Bednar and Jordan Romano going later in drafts.
Yeah, the strikeout rate got better with that changeup. You know, he found a better changeup that he could trust a lot more. So yeah, he became, you know, more of a two pitch guy this year. So yeah, the strikeout rate went up 5%, which helped. But yeah, I mean, this now shows, you know, 2 years in a row, he's been pretty consistent. Even, you know, without the changeup in 2024, he found consistency. So we'll see where he lands, 2026. I'm more excited for him going into next year than I was going into this year or from last year, just because that changeup now is an actual, you know, factor for him, something that we can rely on as a secondary. If he does, you know, if the fastball does lose velo, he still has that changeup to fall back on. But yeah, where he lands, like his role, he should be a closer somewhere, but you know, still see where he lands, because that could change his ranking a little bit. But yeah, it was another great season for Suarez, and yeah, someone I was completely out on who proved us wrong, because yeah, that changeup was for real this year.
That's right. Next, we have Carlos Estevez, who is going at an ADP of 212, and we are fading him because he's just not that great. There was competition there with Lucas Ursig as well, but I don't think we believed in Carlos Estevez's 2024. He was pitching for the Angels that year, right?
Yes, and the Phillies.
Okay, yeah, and then he got a big contract with the Royals, and it looked like he would be the closer, but I don't think we believed in his stuff enough that he would hold on to the closer role for the full season, and he didn't feel like somebody that was even worth targeting or drafting at all around pick 200. Ultimately, we were wrong. He led the American League in saves with 53, with 53. That was his final Yahoo player rank. He had over 40 saves. Pretty crazy season from Carlos Estevez, but yeah, ultimately he was like the luckiest reliever in baseball.
Yeah.
I don't think we were wrong to avoid him, but he just had everything go his way.
Yeah, I think we had the right idea. We just, you know, baseball is gonna baseball sometimes. That's two lucky years, and like lucky by, you know, metrics, xFIP, Sierra, you know, his strikeout minus walk rate. He doesn't miss any bats anymore. Just so many balls in play he gets lucky on. But is that, you know, is that something he can repeat? Because I mean, that it's a solid situation in Kansas City with that ballpark and that division. I'm still probably not gonna go near him next year, just because it's either being stubborn or I'm just I want to be consistent with my approach.
Well, his ADP is gonna be so high just because of the saves total.
And yeah, my everything is telling me to stay away again, because of he ranks last amongst all closers in so many things. Just not in saves, he's first, so that's gonna bump him up. I'm not ruling out him repeating what he did this year, but I still think it would be highly unlikely, and there's got to be some regression, there's got to be some more bad luck.
He's not getting 40 saves again,
and that's who. Yeah. And he's you know, throughout the year was dealing with some injuries too. I don't know, there's just a lot of things. And if the Royals do fall, you know, out of contention here, which who knows with them next year, could happen. He'll definitely be traded, I would imagine, having club option in 2027. So, there's all sorts of kind of red flags for me on Estevez drafting him next year.
All right. And in the same boat, our guy that we are almost always fading, Kyle Finnegan, had an ADP of 213 right after Carlos Estevez. And I mean, if you've listened to the podcast before, you can understand why we're avoiding Kyle Finnegan. Not your typical dominant reliever, but the Nationals just trust him so much for some reason, keep plugging him into that ninth inning role. And he finished the season as the 138th player on the Yahoo Player Rater. And Finnegan was ultimately traded to the Tigers at the deadline, and all of a sudden started looking like an interesting pitcher. And I was like, oh, maybe I see what the Nationals were were seeing in him. And he was splitting save opportunities with Will Vest down the stretch before getting injured. But Kyle Finnegan definitely proved us wrong once again for like the third year in a row. But I mean, I think you just have to trust the process with guys like that, where there's some guys that are going to defy all of the metrics. And I don't think you want to hang your hat on those guys. I don't think you want to rely on those guys, because when the ball inevitably drops, you don't want to be like, oh, okay. I should have known, because and that could be next year for Kyle Finnegan, but I wouldn't expect him to be a closer again next year, unless the Nationals are like, hey, you want to come play for us again?
Well, see, I don't, you know, the Tigers definitely unlocked something with him. He was a totally different guy. I have to dive in a little bit deeper to see what it was and if it's something sustainable. When he came after the injury, when he came back with Detroit in late September, and then throughout the postseason, he wasn't quite as good. But that first stint with Detroit before he went on the IL, he was awesome. So I don't know. I could see him staying in Detroit. Like, they honestly could just run it back with Finnegan and Vest as their, you know, co-closers again. I think Finnegan's from Detroit. I think that's right. So, you know, he might just stay. They won't have to spend too much to keep him either. There was some success there. So it'd be interesting to see where he lands, or maybe he lands somewhere else where a team with some good pitching development can even take him a step further. Cause I mean, the fastball is a solid foundation for Finnegan. He throws upper 90s. It's developing secondaries and knowing how to use his stuff. So, we'll see where he lands. But if he does end up back in Detroit, he now becomes kind of maybe someone I'm in deep leagues, like late in drafts, because I'm sure Vest will get the majority. I'm all of a sudden in on Kyle Finnegan. That would be weird. But people change. I change. Kyle Finnegan can change. We're all changing. So, we'll see what happens next year. But I'm not totally out on him. Like, Estevez I'm out on. But Finnegan, we'll see where he lands. We'll see what happens there.
All right. Next, we have Alexis Diaz, who had an ADP of 162. It looked like he was going to be the Reds closer. And we said, even if he is, we don't want any of that. And we were right, because the ball finally dropped here, just like we've been expecting with guys like Kyle Finnegan and Carlos Estevez. Diaz absolutely fell off the map. He moved through a couple organizations and ultimately didn't catch on anywhere, finishing as the 862nd player on the Yahoo Player Rater. So smart to avoid Alexis Diaz in 2025.
Yeah, and 26, and wherever he lands, it's not going to matter. The Braves, I think, DFA'd him or non-tendered him, so he's a free agent now.
The Dodgers can figure him out,
they're going to bring him back. I mean, we were down on Diaz, but I didn't expect it to have a season from him, you know, in the minors for most of the year, bouncing around teams. That's a pretty quick fall from grace. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm not totally ruling his future out, but he's got a long way to work to get back to, you know, where he was.
Right. Next, we've got Ryan Helsley, who had an ADP of 58, and that was super high, especially considering the ADPs in the 70s for guys like Andrés Muñoz and Felix Bautista. We felt that we were paying up for last year's saves, and we were going to do that. Ryan Helsley is a solid player. We figured he was going to be a decent closer for the Cardinals, but not one that you can bank on to lead the league in saves, let alone pitch as well as he did the previous season. The stuff was still there. He actually looked really good with the Cardinals, but ultimately, once he got traded to the Mets at the trade deadline, not only did his fantasy relevancy go away, but he also absolutely fell apart and started just blowing up every single night. So he ultimately finished the season as the 365th player on the Yahoo Player Rater, making it a smart decision for us to fade Ryan Helsley.
Yeah, part of it, I think we were thinking, like, you know, yeah, obviously the saves weren't going to be there, but also he's more than likely to be traded, and both those things kind of happen.
Right.
And then, yeah, the Mets, I mean, before he got to the Mets, he was having a solid year, but not worthy of that high draft pick.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, top, New York.
Yeah, top 60 is crazy.
Yeah, and then New York just kind of, if everything fell apart, which is kind of making me intrigued by, you know, let's see where he lands this offseason as a free agent. If he can find a closer role somewhere, I'll be intrigued again. I'm sure he'll be fairly cheap no matter what, just because of how bad last year was and how it ended. So yeah, there's some bounce back appeal here. But at the same time, is this you know, Jordan Romano 2.0 for like next year, where like it's not coming back. We'll see. I mean, he wasn't really dealing with injuries, so I feel like there is a better chance for him to rebound. It's just, I mean, there was a thing when he was tipping pitches in New York, right? I mean, I feel like a good team should be able to figure that out and help him fix that. So, Yeah, we'll see where he lands this offseason. But I still think he'll be in the mix for a closer role somewhere if he wants it.
Yeah, definitely. Next, we have Raisel Iglesias, who is going at an ADP of 62. That was very rich for our taste. I mean, I think we both liked Raisel Iglesias, but there were clear signs that maybe we could see some regression this year, and he wasn't quite at that elite level of being somebody that you draft inside the top 60 alongside Ryan Helsley. And ultimately, he cleaned things up in the second half. Like, this was going to be like a clear thing. Thank God we faded him. But
yeah,
he had such a great second half that he finished the season as the 86th player on the Yahoo Player Rater. So ultimately, if you drafted him at 62, you didn't quite get all the value back, but you know, it's pretty either or.
Yeah, I would say a lot of people too. I mean, a lot of, and he was dropped because he lost his job in July, June, right? He lost his job for like a month, and then yeah, he was available in a lot of most of my leagues for a while. He was just sitting there in the wire. So then yeah, I mean, from July on, he was awesome, and that's where he was able to make up some ground. Similar to last year, we talked about how good his second half was last year too. Maybe that's just kind of who he is. You know, big second half. He's the Julio Rodriguez of closers.
Right. It's crazy.
Big second half performer. Uh-huh. But yeah, it's crazy to see that he finished as the 86th player, given how bad he was up until June. So
good in the final 2 months.
Yeah. And again, another, you know, guy who's a free agent. So, you know, for the most part, things have worked out well for him in Atlanta, so it makes sense for him to stay there. But who knows? Maybe that's a guy Cincinnati should take a chance on. Bring him back. Yeah, let's bring back those vibes.
All right. Next, we've got Kirby Yates, who is going at an ADP of 234. I think people were thinking, oh, here's a good dart throw of a guy because we're not really sure who the Dodgers are going to use as the closer. It's easy to forget how good Kirby Yates was in 2024. Had one of the greatest, like, age 38 seasons you'll see from a relief pitcher. But ultimately, with like Tanner Scott and having been signed, and like Blake Treinen coming back from injury, and guys like Michael Kopech, who like had just been acquired from the White Sox and looked dominant in 2024, there were so many guys that it was difficult to see Yates being the closer, like at least the clear cut closer. And it almost felt like a waste of a pick at that point because of how many other guys you could target at that point. And namely, that was AJ Puck. We were like, get Kirby Yates, go for AJ Puck. And we were right. I mean, Yates didn't really get a lot of save opportunities, maybe a handful, but he ended as the 467th player, according to Yahoo.
That's crazy now that Yates was the 467th player and Puck was 465, and Puck only pitched in 8 games.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that was, yeah, that was why I like Yates for as it's like a 234 is a dart throw, sure, but there's guys like AJ Puck, you know, Aroldis Chapman later would have been obviously the best pick. But yeah, we were just kind of out on the Dodgers in general, but this Yates ADP I feel like was the most egregious for us because it was pretty clear that Scott was going to get the chance to close. I think that became apparent, you know, early on in spring training. So yeah, the fact that Yates was still kind of lingering as like a 200, you know, pick around 200 just didn't make sense. And yeah, again, another guy who's a free agent with closing experience who could definitely bounce back next year, but him I'm more questionable. Yeah, I know. That's, you know, I think last year was more fluky and luck based than anything, but we'll see what happens next year. He'll definitely get a look somewhere.
All right. And our last fade was Jason Foley, who had an ADP of 300. This was another one of those dart throws. I mean, it was really up in the air who was going to be the Tigers closer. We were on team Bo Brugesky. It ultimately ended up being Will Vess, but Jason Foley was the closer the year before. And I think that's why he had a higher ADP than those other guys. He didn't pitch at all. He finished as the 2,288th player according to the player rater. So that is very low. But I mean, we were avoiding him because we didn't want to pay up for him being the part-time closer in 2024 with so many other options. The postseason before, that was the first time we sort of seen that bullpen used differently. And so I think it was pretty clear that there wasn't going to be one guy closing out games for the Tigers. And we felt that Foley wasn't even the best guy in that bullpen. I mean, he fell off, I think, in the second half or something like that, if I remember correctly. But I don't think he was somebody. We were like, okay,
let's year. Yeah.
If you're going to go for any Tigers pitcher, there's plenty other guys to get way later in the draft. Yeah.
And we were mostly in Umbrieski, but yeah, obviously there was Canely and Vest as well, and it mixed in. But yeah, I think Foley was just, the other guys in the Detroit bullpen are better. So don't even, and Foley's going the highest. Don't take a, if you're going to throw a dart, throw it later if you're in a deeper draft on someone else. So, Trevor McGill's pitching in the fifth inning right now, by the way. So just
okay.
So we were talking about that earlier.
in a three-run deficit.
You're down 3-0. Yeah, he's pitching the fifth inning.
Interesting.
Maybe just to get him some more work. I don't know. It is interesting, though.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that.
I mean, Palencia did just come in the fifth inning, too. So their closers are kind of just, doesn't matter. It's in the postseason. Innings don't matter anymore.
Okay, well, let's look at some of the guys that we were referring to as sleepers in the preseason, guys that were going after pick 350, in between 350 and 545. Guys like Seth Halverson, Jesus Tinoco, Justin Slayton, Bo Brugesky, Jorge Lopez, Robert Garcia, and you threw in a last minute Jose Ferrer as well. A lot of those guys did get hurt. Slayton was out for most of the season. Tinoco missed like the whole season. Jorge Lopez sort of fell apart. Bo Brugesky got injured as well. Seth Halverson did get injured ultimately, but he provided some value. Robert Garcia had
a decent
amount of saves too. And Ferrer and Garcia were both very prescient picks there. I mean, Garcia was going so late, 544.
Yeah. And that was, I don't even know, what was the consensus with the Rangers bullpen at this point? I don't even, maybe Chris Martin was the favorite. Garcia had I still feel like there's a more consistent reliever there with Robert Garcia. He had stretches where he's really good and stretches where he's, mediocre, and it's like hard to trust him. So I don't know if he'll ever be a full-time closer, especially in Texas. I feel like they're bound to just go out and finally address that. I hope they address the closer role, and let's not ruin Jacob DeGrom's last few years as a starter in this league. Garcia is still definitely the best of this group. I mean, Halverson, if he didn't get hurt, probably would have finished the year as the closer. I don't know how effective he would have been ultimately, but yeah, it's still Colorado's still a spot I'm just don't want to take any chances on, even next year probably.
You get a new GM. I'm like, there's a little bit of hope, but I think as long as the Monforts own the franchise, it's going nowhere.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a willingness. They're open to spending money. It's just they don't spend the money right. It's on Chris Bryant and Herman Marquez and Kyle Freeland and Anthony Sensatella. That's if they have money to spend. If they spend it right, they can definitely turn things around there. But they're still a ways away, and I don't think the closer is going to make much of a difference for them next year.
We also labeled some deep sleepers, and this will wrap things up. This was between picks 548 and 742. So real, real deep dart throws, like AL, NL only leagues. or like, I don't know, 20 team leagues or something. There's very few drafts that go this deep. But if you're really looking deep, and some of these guys were solid. I mean, we had Jimmy Garcia and Jose Alvarado, and both those guys at some points in the season were providing a lot of value.
Yeah. Alvarado was the closer until he got suspended. I mean, that would have been, yeah, that was a huge, definitely a huge win. And then he got suspended. Garcia too, if he stayed healthy, you know, with Hoffman's, you know, Hoffman really struggling down the stretch, I wonder if he would have potentially taken over some closer duties. Yeah. And some of these other guys too, like Anthony Bender is in the mix before he got hurt. So why did all these guys end up hurt?
I mean, he was solid throughout the year.
Yeah. He was kind of sharing saves with the four guys that were sharing saves in Miami. Yeah. But yeah, his ratio, from a ratio standpoint, he was great. Yeah, Mason Montgomery. I'm still in on Mason Montgomery for next year, the post-hype sleeper, whatever you want to call it. The stuff's still there. Command needs to be better. Consistency needs to be better. But the stuff's still crazy for Mason Montgomery. Just needs to hone in that command and just pitch. Just, I don't know. He could use a better secondary as well.
Yep. And then Scott Barlow and Mark Church, post-pick 700. I mean, not really relevant guys, but I don't know. We'll see. Maybe next year. Barlow's probably not solid. Scott Barlow. He was good. I mean, he was good. Not just in the fantasy sense.
Yeah. And Mark Church, I think, got hurt really early. That was kind of a guy in spring that was making noise. And then, yeah, that never really worked out. So
don't count him out yet. I mean, he could be back this next season.
He's always had like injuries, had health issues throughout his career. Yeah. But yeah, there is a closer, you know, mix there from Mark Church if he can stay healthy for a season.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on socials at I Am Rick Graham. Like I mentioned earlier, putting together the finishing touches of my initial closer reliever ranks for 2026. Should be out next week. I have 75 closers. They're not closers. There's 75 relievers that could be of use in standard leagues, basically. So yeah, we'll see. It's always fun doing these in October and seeing how it plays out, you know, by the end of March. So, but yeah, that is pretty much all I got going on right now.
All right. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. Not really sure what I'm going to be working on this offseason. I mean, I know, but I don't know what I'm going to be posting. We'll definitely be on this podcast, but working on starting pitching stuff, working on relief pitching stuff. I'll be all over the place. But you can still find me working over at Baseball HQ as well. And I don't think it's too late to sign up for the First Pitch Arizona. So if still on the fence for that, it's only a few weeks away, but both Rick and I will be there. So once again, if your dream is to meet the In the Pen podcast co-host, there's your opportunity. But that'll do it for this episode number 139 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all in a couple of weeks.